Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher. I'm also known as the Food Healer. And today we've got a really interesting interview. I've been wondering what's been going on with the wildlife with all these hurricanes that are going on. So I've got Jenna Golden of Save the Manatee Club. She's the Science and Outreach Coordinator, and I'm going to speak to her about what's going on with the manatees. So Jenna, are you there?
Yes. Hey, how's it going today, Celia?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you for asking. I'm excited to be talking to you.
I'm really psyched to be talking to you because this is a subject that I've been dying to find information out about, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot out for the general public. So I'm really psyched to hear what you have to say and if there's anything that we can do to help save the manatees today.
Oh, awesome.
So I want to just start and jump into questions. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go.
Okay, cool. Thanks. All right, so you're the Science and Outreach Coordinator for Save the Manatee Club. What does that mean?
So that means that my title is basically spreading awareness about manatees and teaching people about manatees. A couple of my responsibilities, I do an online Skype education program through Microsoft Education. So I actually Skype with classrooms all over the world.
Cool.
And I teach kids and other people internationally about manatees. I also do a lot of different outreach events. I'll bring material to different places so they have signage or informational material about manatees. And sometimes I get to do cool things like this where I talk to people like you and tell them all about stuff.
I'm so excited about this. That's so cool what you do. I love the fact that you're teaching people all over the world about manatees because I feel like, I mean, I lived in Florida for a hot minute, and I feel like even when I was there, people just don't know that much about them. You know what I mean? It's kind of like this mythical being. It's almost like a mermaid when you see one, you know? So this is, I'm just psyched you're educating people on this. And so where are they found? Are manatees everywhere, like all over the world?
Yeah, actually. So there's multiple species. The one that we have here in the United States, it's technically called the West Indian manatee, but a lot of people don't know. It's actually a subspecies. So the one that we have here is, the United States is always known as the Florida manatee, right? So that animal's found all over the coastal part of the state of Florida during the winter time specifically. During the summer, when things warm up, they can travel a couple states in either direction, either up or over. A couple individuals have been known to go as far west as Texas or as far north as Massachusetts, but that's not normal. That's not a normal event or occurrence. But then on a more international scale, the second subspecies of the West Indian manatee is called the Antillean manatee. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that you're going to find all throughout the Caribbean and that type of area.
Oh, cool.
There's a couple other species that go down into South America, the Amazonian manatee or even the West African manatee. And then the cousin that we endearly call the dugong, that animal's found all around the Indo-Pacific, so areas like New Zealand and Japan. So believe it or not, the manatee family, as elusive as it is, does have kind of a wide footprint globally, but they're more found in small numbers and in pockets, so they're not as common as people might think.
Are they a social animal or are they pretty solitary?
So that's a really good question because the answer is kind of both. It really depends.
Mm-hmm.
On a regular basis, manatees usually travel maybe in like a mother calf pair, or you may see several together. It depends on if there's warm water or a food source. So if there's an area specifically, like say it's a freshwater river and it's got a nice temperature for manatees, a lot of the springs, like one area I'm very familiar with is called Blue Spring.
Mm-hmm.
During certain days of the wintertime, aka manatee season, you can find them in the couple hundreds at a time.
Oh, Oh, cool.
So obviously in that event, they're socializing and amongst each other. But when it comes to migrating or, you know, just moving around in general, you're likely to either find a manatee alone or maybe one, two, or possibly three.
Oh, wow. And so, like I said in the beginning, I want to talk about bad weather and manatees. I mean, what do they do during tropical storms and hurricanes?
Yeah, so, well, there's not a ton known, but before, it has been observed that before hurricanes and major storms, manatees move to what we just consider a more protected area to be. So Florida's unique in the sense that there's so much intercoastal area and there's mm-hmm. so many pockets of shallow water, which manatees really, they favor. Mm-hmm. So areas that you find shelter from storm and wind. These are places like marina bases or canals. Researchers have observed manatees moving to these more protected waters mm-hmm. before hurricanes. So, you know, we think that they somewhat do know what's going on and that they're able to seek the most appropriate shelter area that they are able to find.
Yeah, because I lived on the intercoastal, and it was like during hurricane season, all of a sudden that's when we would get the manatee sightings. You know, it was kind of like just getting out of the ocean and trying to get into like this other island. But I wasn't sure if that was typical or if it was just something unusual.
Yeah, there's like a lot of places that have like tree coverage, especially those freshwater areas or places where there's mangroves and such. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of low-hanging trees, so that could potentially provide more shelter for them.
And so, like, how dangerous are hurricanes and tropical storms for manatees? Do they get injured a lot by them?
Yeah, I mean, of course, just like with people, you know, they can be, these storms can be dangerous. But luckily enough for us and for all you listening out there to feel a little better, I mean, manatees are very well adapted to their environment, which is a common phrase you'll probably hear in the science community. But it's important to note that, you know, these manatees are built for their environment and where mm-hmm. they live. So, yes, they can be dangerous. And, of course, different storms have different levels of impacts. But, you know, manatees seem to know what to do the best that they can.
Yeah.
Some of the issues that they do face when the storms, you know, take place. I don't know if you've heard of saltwater intrusion, but where there's a lot of storm surge and overflow, saltwater will go into these freshwater areas, mm-hmm. areas that manatees often seek shelter in. Mm-hmm. So that could potentially be a harm for them because that can affect either their drinking water source or it can affect the freshwater vegetation that can be their food source. So that's definitely one issue that could arise from storms.
Yeah.
Second one that a lot of people may not just think of right off the bat is with more intense rainfall, there can be more red tide events. And red tide is that harmful algal bloom that occurs. And that is, you know, the reason that occurs during storms is because all of the runoff and all the nutrient pollution that we have from agriculture and from septic tanks and all near the coast, mm-hmm. when it rains that heavy and there's so much water all at once, that takes all that from the land and moves it into the water sources.
Okay.
And that, again, that can be fatal to manatees because it can either affect them physically or, of course, it can affect their food source.
Yeah, totally. And so am I getting this right, that manatees can be in saltwater or freshwater?
Yes, that's correct. I would say more often than not, you'll probably find them in freshwater. I mean, I suppose that depends on the season, especially during the wintertime, because mm-hmm. that's where they're going to find the most refuge for warm water because they do need it to be warm. But of course, the state of Florida has so much tropical vibes around it that they can travel in the ocean and in salt water, but that's usually more in the summertime when they're migrating.
Mm-hmm.
But they are one of the few animals that's unique to manatees that they are able to go back and forth between both. Most animals, even marine mammals, don't do that, so that's pretty cool.
Okay, this is a really stupid question, so bear with me, okay? Because I'm kind of embarrassed to ask you this. Okay, so let's say Fred the manatee is living in the ocean and a storm is coming and he's like, I got to get out of Dodge. Can these animals actually travel over land so that he could like get to a lake or something like that?
Well, you know, that depends on where the rain level is at that point. Because even if they sense a storm coming, it uh-huh. could already be raining. So if the water levels are already starting to be on the rise before, like, say, the bulk of the storm hits or the wall of the storm that they call it, you know, it could already be raining and then make certain places that are not normally accessible to manatees
mm-hmm.
then accessible to manatees. But their path usually, because of the way that the Florida coastline is divvied up, there's the ocean side, and then they also have, of course, the intercoastal, and that's what connects the ocean. So they just have to find their way through canals or through those areas and marinas where the freshwater meets the saltwater. There's usually, I mean, manatees are very, like I said, very well adapted to their environment. So they'll find it when they need it. But believe it or not, that's not a stupid question, because once it starts raining quite a bit, the water will rise and they can have access to other areas that they might not normally. And manatees do like it shallow. So, you know, that can sometimes lead to them even being stranded because they can go places they normally wouldn't. And then the water goes out and then they're stuck. But yeah, they could do that.
So are they able, like, okay, let's say, you know, are they able to carry their body mass outside? Like, can they be like a walrus where, like, they come out of the water and they're, you know, if there's a little bit of water, or do they have to be submerged in order for this to happen?
Both.
Okay.
I don't know. So if you've ever seen manatees, I mean, I've obviously spent a lot of time just watching them at different places, like SeaWorld, in different areas where they're being rehabilitated. And some manatees do it and some manatees don't. Well, they'll actually use their pectoral flippers to kind of haul themselves up a little. And some of those manatees are just more curious. I don't know if you remember the famous manatee Snooty, rest in peace, that adorable soul. But he was very famous for doing that, for lifting up outside of the water to kind of like greet people. So that has been a behavior that's been observed in manatees in areas where they're being rehabilitated. They can kind of sort of haul themselves up. I don't know that they'd be able to haul their entire body weight up and out, though. I think it's more just a little leverage. But again, some manatees do and some don't.
That's wild. And so, I mean, how are the ones doing in Florida after all these storms that have been coming through? Are they okay?
You know, I wish I had a solid answer for you on that. Of course, with all the cleanup and everything still going on, I'm sure that that is still quite an ongoing process. I mean, I've been trying to keep up reading some of these stories. I've read a few really inspiring stories about, like, Good Samaritans who have helped. And of course, we work closely with the FWC, which is the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the people that are responsible for rescuing manatees. They're the ones who get the calls when you call the hotline to report them, either injured or stranded or in distress and whatnot. So, you know, we get those reports and we can see a lot of that. So obviously there have definitely been some efforts to help individuals. I read about a couple of manatees that got stranded in a pond that wasn't there before the storm.
Oh,
and then
wow.
Once the water receded, they couldn't get back out. I know SeaWorld's actually rehabilitating a tiny calf right now that they believe was separated from its mother during Irma.
Good.
And so they're hoping, their fingers crossed for the best outcome for that little guy. But I mean, this is definitely going to be an ongoing process as time unfolds and people kind of get their life back together, and FWC continues to get those calls.
Yeah, because I mean, it's, you know, I'm in New York and I'm in Brooklyn actually, and it's amazing at how little information we're getting up here regarding anywhere that's been hit by these storms. I mean, the news from Florida is really, really minimal. Needless to say, Puerto Rico, nobody's hearing anything about, you know. And I know we're not alone on that one, but it's really interesting to me that, like, you know, the damage in Florida and Texas and Houston and all that's, like, it's really not being discussed that much. And so I kind of feel like I'm in this void of, you know, well, I hope they're all okay at this point, you know, which obviously it's a little soon for that, but...
You know, it's funny. I have a social media theory on that, though. I think it really depends on, like, what your circle is and who your people are, because I have so many friends from Florida, but I'm from California, so I have all my friends there. So there was, on my newsfeed, it was a constant trade-off between the earthquakes in Mexico and then all the stuff going on in Florida because of all my friends in the different places. But yeah, I mean, you know how those things go. It's like they make the headlines the day that they're the most important, and then they move on to the next thing. But you know, with hurricanes, there's so much destruction and damage that it takes a long time to get things, you know, back to what people would consider normal to be.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, unless you've been in a hurricane or you've, you know, experienced the aftermath, people just don't understand how intense this is. You know, it's not like a storm that comes and hits up north. You know, I mean, we got Sandy, I guess it was 5 years ago, and so that kind of made everybody wake up a little bit and realize that, you know, just because we're in New York City doesn't mean that we may not wind up submerged, you know. And so it's a really interesting thing.
Hurricanes are no joke. That is definitely some scary stuff.
Oh, God. I mean, I used to live in the Bahamas, and I fortunately was never there for a hurricane, but I had some friends that were there. And I mean, they grew up there, and, you know, they're used to this stuff, and, like, they knew how to prepare and all this. And it was a storm. Oh, God. I think it was Hurricane Andrew in 2000, and it decimated the island. And it was just hearing the stories of people. Like, the eye was stuck over a friend of mine's house. What was it? The storm lasted, I don't even remember how long. It was something hideous, like 18 hours. And this friend of mine's married and has kids. And so the husband and child slept through the whole thing while she was slowly having a heart attack in the living room because she was so scared.
Yeah.
You know, and once that eye passes over and then it's all still, which is the freakiest thing in the world. I mean, that's
like
even worse.
Yeah,
I hate that. And the light's weird. Like, that I've seen, but I've never, somehow I've seen that, and I haven't seen, like, the hideousness of a really, really severe hurricane, you know. But it's something really difficult, I think, for people to grasp unless they've been in it. So I think that, you know, I wish they would report more on it so that people truly understood, like, how dangerous and how serious this truly is, you know.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I know that there's definitely more parts down south that were hit pretty hard. The Keys seem pretty devastated from everything that I'm understanding and all that. So, I mean, man, nature is no joke. Mother Nature is a powerful thing, and we need to learn to understand and respect that and work as much with it moving forward as we can.
That's the thing. And it's like, I lived on Big Pine Key for a hot minute, and that's where it landed. And it's like, I'm not hearing a word. And that island is, it's like a speck in the ocean, you know, and it's not that high up. I mean, the highest point is, I would bet, is lower than 20 feet. You know, so it's
at sea level or below.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I lived in Key West, and where I lived was actually I was above sea level by 9 feet because I lived on the second floor. But technically, the building I lived in was below sea level.
That's wild.
So, you know, it's like, for all my Florida friends, I'm just worried about them. And then with the manatees, it was like, oh man, you know, it's like, we got to see what's going on with them. So, like,
of course.
Yeah, it's, you know, and the other Florida wildlife as well. I mean, it would, you know, obviously everything is affected. I wanted to talk to you about the manatees since they're not really known as well, you know, but obviously this is affecting other sea life and, you know, all the animals are being affected by this. It's not like, you know, manatees got it even worse than everybody else, so.
Yeah, I've been in this community a long time, and I know all the rescue and rehabilitation efforts are at full steam ahead right now, and that's kind of how it goes with these different events that occur. So I know a ton of people in the field of work that are probably working some massive overtime and sleepless nights helping as many animals as they can, but, you know, it's tough for sure.
Yeah, it is, and those people are saints because it's a rough job. I mean, you know, the theory or the belief on so much of this is like, okay, you're going to see a stranded, I don't know, fill in the blank wild animal, and you know, you're going to go up to it, and it's going to be like, oh, thank God you're here, you know, save me. And it's like, no, they're scared, they might be injured. Chances are you're going to get beat up pretty good if you don't know what you're doing. You know, these animals are huge. It's, you know, and it's also like, I worked at a vet's office, and let me tell you, a scared cat is way stronger than I've ever been, and I'm really strong, you know? So, like, people don't understand that something in panic mode just has that, like,
they
you know.
They don't know that you're there to help, of course.
Yeah.
They're just wild animals, and we're just trying to do the best we can. But, yeah, I spent, you know, in my younger years, I did an internship working with FWC, and I was on the manatee rescue team, and that was kind of my dream when I was a kid. But to be totally honest, doing it really more so broke my heart when I learned that, you know, about 80% of that job is collecting carcasses. And then the other significant portion of it is what they call a necropsy, which is an autopsy for an animal. And going through all that, I just realized, like, I really wasn't built for that. I think it's important because it's always what I wanted to do, but I had such a mentally, emotionally, and of course, like you said, sometimes physically, hard time doing it because I just so badly wanted to be saving these animals, and I saw so much of the opposite that's kind of how I settled down more into working with education and conservation, taking what I knew I actually had a skill set in and using that to help animals. Because I'll tell you what, I was not that good at that job simply because it was hard for me. I had a hard time.
I feel you. I feel you so much. I mean, that's the reason I do this radio show. I have a million friends that work in rescue and rehab and all of it, TNR, I mean, name it. My listeners have heard me say this 800 million times, so I apologize to you guys. I can't even handle the ASPCA commercials on TV. Like, I'm just like, turn it off, turn it off.
Sarah McLachlan, man.
She kills me.
In the
oh, my God. It's like, no.
Every time I hear it, I shut down. I can't.
Oh God, I heard it recently, just like, I was in a store and they started playing it. It was like, get me out of here. You know, it was like, everyone burst into tears in the store. You know, it's like, oh shit, what are we doing here? It's just crazy.
Oh man.
But
there's
no, I'm the same way.
Comedian that covers that. She does like a little skit on that whole infomercial and how it all goes. Her name's Eliza Schlesinger, and it's literally one of the funniest things I've ever seen. She uses her dog as an example. Hilarious.
It's a rough one, and I'm the same way. I mean, I worked in a vet's office for a couple of years, and I mean, vets are great and they do great work, but I am not cut out to do that, you know? And so this is my way of giving back, is getting educated people like you on the show that we can have intelligent conversations and, you know, just educate this group of people that listen, which is, for me, it's a real gift and I'm really grateful for it.
Knowledge is power, man.
Yeah, it
is. Forever and always.
Yeah, it is. So we need to take a really quick break for station identification. I'm talking to Jenna Golden, sure, who is the Science and Outreach Coordinator for Save the Manatee Club. So we'll be back in about a minute, minute and a half.
The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate. An incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
And we are back. I'm talking to Jenna Golden, Science and Outreach Coordinator for Save the Manatee Club, about the manatees and what's going on in Florida after these hurricanes that have come through. So, Jenna, what injuries typically occur to manatees in hurricanes? What do you guys normally see?
Well, of course, that's varying depending on the intensity of the storm and mm-hmm. different areas that are hit. But, you know, sometimes we see manatees that can become stranded. We discussed earlier about how mm-hmm. with storm surges and a sudden rise in water, manatees have access to other areas they might normally. But then, of course, once things start moving a different direction, that water can recede and move back, and then manatees become stranded in areas that they can't find their way out of. I've definitely seen a mm-hmm. few of those stories that are covered around the state about manatees ending up in either people's backyards that shouldn't be there or something like that. So that's one issue for them, because of course if they can't get to their water source, they're in some serious distress.
Yeah.
The other one that's, you know, kind of scary is, and of course a little sad, is that in the events like this where manatees have to move and perhaps move quickly, calves and mothers can be separated.
So oh, God, no.
Babies can be separated. Yeah, that was the manatee that I mentioned that SeaWorld is taking care of, is that little baby that they found alone. So,
my God.
Those are some of the things that are resulting from those storms. Of course, you know, with water and rain and things moving and debris, manatees can get rolled around or scraped up a bit, mm-hmm. but I would say those are the strandings, and the separation is probably the most common things you're looking at during storms.
God, the separation's like a bad Disney movie. It's like, no. I mean, that's terrible.
I wish you'd stuff. No way.
No, dude, I was hoping you were going to be like, oh, you know, broken fins. Like, that was the answer I was expecting, not like, mama.
Yeah.
Like, no. Oh, God, I apologize for laughing. It's just the way I get through this stuff, so I'm sorry about that. No, this is tragic. I'm not trying to make light of it. I have this horrible habit that I'll also laugh at funerals. So, you know, if you ever need that, give me a call and I'll be glad to go with you.
Good to know. Duly noted.
Oh, dude, it's the worst. It's genetic. My entire family, all the women do this. We're super fun at funerals. It's something special.
Jeez.
So on that note, how has global warming affected manatees?
Say that one more time.
How's global warming affected these guys? Has it?
Oh, yeah. So climate change, of course, is a hot topic and should be, because that is definitely something that we should be concerned with and talking about. So thank you for asking. But basically, you know, with climate change, what we're likely to see in the future is an increase in the frequency of these intense storms. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say all at once we were dealing, especially here in the United States, with some pretty serious issues between Texas and Florida and Mexico and all that kind of stuff. So, of course, climate change is going to be a huge issue, and those storms can increase. And like we've been talking about this entire time, those storms can definitely have an effect on manatees, you know, right now and, of course, in the future.
Unreal. So what do you think is the biggest threat to manatees?
Oh, man, the million-dollar question, huh?
I
don't think
right?
it's one thing. I think it's definitely a couple.
That's
but
cool.
I would say you're probably top two contenders right now that we're dealing with is habitat destruction, which, you know, habitat destruction is basically a cause of a large population issue. And having so many more people, manatees are losing their natural habitat. They're losing their food sources and the warm water places that they're used to seeking refuge in. And then, of course, having so many people around, we're dealing with pollution problems. We talked about those algal blooms and red tide events. More and more people means more and more pollution, and that can, you know, refuel the cycle of some of these negative things that are affecting manatees, you know, physically or their food source or whatever. And then I would say probably number two is boat strikes. People don't give enough credit to that often. And like last year, 2016, I believe, was a record-breaking year for the number of boat strikes. In regards to manatees. You know, it's thought that one particular manatee may be hit multiple times in their life. So sometimes they survive, sometimes they're okay, sometimes they can deal with it on their own. And then, of course, sometimes we have to step in places like FWC and SeaWorld work together to rescue and rehabilitate these animals. But you know, I would say boat strikes and habitat destruction are the two things that I really try to make people the most aware of and help understand that these are things that we have control over. You know, a lot of little kids, they always want to know, what eats a manatee? What are manatees' predators? Well, uniquely enough, manatees have no natural predators other than man. So that means this is really pretty much up to us. We have the power to change these little daily things that do have a big impact, not just for manatees, but, of course, for wildlife globally.
So what would you say is, like, you know, give me the top two simple things that people can do to help help wildlife?
The top two simple things I would say are definitely educate yourself and start the conversation, because one thing that you said at the beginning of our time together really resonated with me, something that I encounter every day, is that most people just don't know a lot about these animals. And like we've been talking about, knowledge is power, and when you don't know, you can't help or you can't care, and if you care, hopefully you're willing to do something.
Totally.
So I would say just educating yourself and starting that conversation with other people, and then kind of getting involved with your local government, because a lot of people don't understand the power that you have by contacting your local officials or sitting in on a city council meeting and just showing support for a certain issue or something like that does go a long way. And of course, on our website, we offer an entire list of the different easy ways that you can, you know, get involved. But I would say those are two big ones.
Cool.
I got a whole laundry list if you want the others.
I mean, you know, I'm really, really interested, because it's something that, you know, it's the type of thing when people hear about the, you know, wild animals and trying to help them out, it's a lot of people just feel so helpless regarding it, you know? And
Absolutely.
So if it's something like, well, I'm not going to buy Roundup anymore, I mean, that's huge. You know what I mean? It's like, if we can reduce pesticide use or whatever, even if two people listen, I feel like we've done our job.
Yeah, I would say, you know, like I said, with my Sky program, I talk to people all over the world. So if I'm talking to somebody in India or, you know, South America or something like that, I'm going to concentrate more on the things that are globally affecting manatees. So
totally.
Things like reducing, reusing, recycling, and just educating yourself. If I'm talking to somebody, a Floridian or somebody in and around a state, I say, you know, if you're a boater, follow those signs, slow down, especially when you know you're in a manatee area, and do your best to reduce fertilizer on your lawn and any of those nutrient pollutions from your home, like, you know, washing your car in the driveway. There are all sorts of ways that chemicals leak locally into your waterways and then kind of fuel those negative things like algal blooms. So, of course, it depends on where you are, but there's something everybody can do.
Totally.
At least.
Totally. And when you find out how simple they are, it's like, oh, wow, really? Or when you find out, you know, thinking that you're doing something really good, and then it's like, in the long run, that's going to be really bad. And it's like, oh, no.
I know. Yep.
Those are the ones I'm bummed out for. You know, it's like, I'm helping. And it's like, actually, sorry, you know, but at least then the dialogue can start. So that's pretty good, you know.
I mean, that's the world we live in. There's so much information out there, but you kind of got to work through it to find what's real and what's not and what's important and useful and helpful and all that good stuff.
I think that's a great point. And so, I mean, if somebody is listening to this and is like, you know, I want to find out about manatees, besides your website, which I want you to tell us anyway, what do you consider good sources, or how do you know if you're looking at a reputable source? Do you? Or how does one, I should say, not just you, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I go for stuff that we use on our website, of course, because it's all approved information. I know that because I'm part of that. But outside of us, when it comes to manatees, you know, look for those sources that are, you know, that are considered credible. And if you're wondering, well, that sounds pretty vague, what do you mean by that? I mean, local news just kind of covers what they find first, and you know, but look for those naturals. Look for anything that's specific to manatees, anything Florida Fish and Wildlife related, anything, you know, some of the safe ones like the South Florida Museum or even like National Geographic, any of those things, those sources and people that you know are just like we do doing their research to make sure that they have the most appropriate information available.
Yeah.
I would say that social media is definitely not your best bet when it comes to what you should believe or not. And I wish I could tell every person, especially people my age, that, like, don't believe everything you read. It's really misleading. But, you know, if you're really interested in something and you have that passion, dive into it and learn as much as you can. And when you become part of that community, part of that world, you know the people that are providing the appropriate information. So, like, you know, of course, our organization, www.savethemanatee.org, I would always recommend as the number one source for anything manatee related, of course.
I mean, your website's amazing. It's so complete. There's so much information on it. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I like that one.
I would say stay tuned because we are in the middle of a total oversight, our total website overhaul right now.
Wow.
There's going to be just as much information, but it's going to look even more beautiful.
Oh, cool.
In the very near future.
Cool.
Yeah. So there's lots of good stuff coming their way. But one of my favorite things about our website is just simply the fact that there is special areas to navigate on the website. If you're a teacher or if you're a student or if you're a concerned citizen that wants to report something or maybe you want to volunteer with us, there's definitely a way for everybody to help, and I wish I could say that 1,000 times so that everybody understands.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. Oh, Jenna, we're out of time, but I've really, really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for teaching us about manatees today and what's going on with the hurricanes. I had a blast. This was great.
You know what? I had a blast, too, even though it's kind of about an intense subject, but I'm really happy to have the opportunity to not only meet you and talk to you, but also spread some of that awareness and, you know, like we said, knowledge is power. So thank you so much. I had a blast, too.
Thank you, and thank you for helping keep this upbeat, because this could have been a really, really horribly depressing interview, and so, you know, it's a very sad topic. However, to get the information across and not be like, and then they, you know, it's a gift to be able to do that. So you are amazing at what you do. And thank you so much for spending the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. And for all the listeners, thank you guys for tuning in. You can find me on Facebook at Animal Instincts 73. That's the search for it. You can find me at Twitter at Food Healer. You can find me on Instagram at Animal Instinct Radio. And probably find me on Facebook at Food Healer as well. Sorry, I just spaced out. Anyway, I hope you guys have a great week. We'll talk to you next week with a new episode. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.